And welcome back to the CBSSports.com Eye on College Football podcast. I am Chip Patterson, joined for this Week 2 Rewind by Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, how do you feel with 2 weeks of college football down? Do you still have your job?
Yes, I do. I have, as of this moment, I have not been informed of being fired as of now.
Well, Texas has not made an official announcement yet, but CBS Sports' Bruce Feldman can confirm that Manny Diaz, defensive coordinator at Texas, is out, and they will be bringing in Greg Robinson as the new defensive coordinator. This happens just hours after BYU quarterback Taysom Hill runs for 258 yards and 3 touchdowns as part of a massive 550 rushing yard team effort by Brigham Young in an absolutely convincing win over Texas. Very embarrassing for the Longhorns. So, Tom, let's start our rewind right there. You kept a close eye on this game. You wrote about New Year, same Texas run defense for the site. Was there anything specifically about this game with BYU that stood out to you, or do you really think that it is, you know, they bring back what few starters they brought back still have the same bug?
I think Texas's defenses the last few years have had a serious problem with the read option, and I think that kind of bit them in the butt again last night, because, I mean, it was BYU was pretty much running the same exact play over and over again, and it was quarterback Taysom Hill who ended up with, what, like 250 yards of his own, 259. Jamal Williams, tailback, had 182 yards. It was, you know, they would just read and they'd go with play and they would run right over Texas. The tackle wasn't helping much either. Let's be clear there. When Texas defenders got to the ball, they weren't bringing the player down. So it was just the kind of performance you see where you're like, man, this coach might get fired.
Except that this coach who might get fired is Mack Brown, and this is Texas University, one of the, you know, the most storied programs ever. Mack, you know, I remember there was a time where he was talking like he's going to be coaching until 2020. With the fact that he has chosen to remove Manny Diaz at this point in the season, it was surprising, because that's, you know, if you get a certain amount of get out of jail free cards, getting rid of Manny Diaz, because the defense was absolutely an issue last night, and I don't think it's going to all of a sudden get better before they face Ole Miss, another team that has a multiple offense, one that goes at a fast speed, directed by Bo Wallace, with Hugh Freeze calling the plays, Jeff Scott, Moncrief. I mean, there's players all over the place. Laquan Treadwell. I think Texas is going to perform just as poorly against Ole Miss, and so now there's no one to put that blame on with Diaz already out. Do you think Mack Brown makes it to the end of the season?
I don't know. I would say that the odds of him not making it, if Texas doesn't get its act together, are a lot greater than I think are greater today than I did yesterday. But I will say, you know, he's brought on Greg Robinson to replace Diaz, and obviously the easy jokes are there considering where we last saw Greg Robinson at Michigan and how terrible things went for the Wolverines with Robinson. But in 2004, Robinson was Texas's defensive coordinator. He spent a year there before he went to Syracuse. In that season, the Longhorns went 11-1 and only allowed 23 twice. So when they ran the 4-3 under Greg Robinson at Texas, things went pretty well. When he ran the 3-3-5, things didn't go very well. I'm not saying he's going to come in and fix it, because like you said, it's the middle of the year, and it's really hard to come in and fix something that's broke during, you know, the middle of the season once it started. And they're facing an Ole Miss offense that's very good. But I wouldn't be shocked if we see improvement. I just don't know if it'll be enough, and I don't know if it's a permanent solution, because like we were intimating earlier, if Texas doesn't, you know, at least compete for a Big 12 title and hang in there for the rest of the season, I wouldn't be surprised to see Mack Brown gone at the end of the year.
And there are some very good rushing offenses that we've seen thus far in the Big 12.
Yes, and Texas still has to play all of them. You don't escape anybody in the Big 12. They play that round robin, so you're not dodging anybody.
We will get to those Big 12 offenses here in just a little bit. But before we do, Tom, we are going to pivot and turn our attention towards the SEC East, where Georgia – stepping up, answering big, big home win a week after losing to Clemson, 41-30 over South Carolina. I do not want to try and focus on necessarily the Jadeveon Clowney, Steve Spurrier angle. There is certainly a lot being made of the fact that Clowney believes that teams are scheming against him, which is smart. I mean, if you were a coach, you would probably...
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, wouldn't you be scheming? And I've said as much, but instead I want to focus on Georgia. The concerns that you had after the Clemson game, do you feel better about them right now, or do you think that this win over South Carolina was just Georgia finally sort of playing to the team that you expected coming into the season?
Oh, yeah, my concerns are alleviated quite a bit, because my main concern with Georgia last week was the offensive line, because Aaron Murray was sacked four times in that Clemson game, and I was worried about facing that South Carolina defensive line, but they did a very good job of neutralizing not only Clowney, but everybody down the line. They averaged over yards a play, and while they didn't have a ton of success running the ball, they only averaged 4.3 yards a carry. When you have a player like Gurley, he's kind of those players where he can get stopped, and he gets stopped, and then bam, he breaks off like the 40-yard big play. He's always capable of that. So I'm a lot more confident in Georgia this week, obviously, than compared to last week's. I don't know if it's a perfect team. I still think that defense is going to cause them some problems in the long run of the season. But it's definitely a team now that, you look at the SEC East and you're like, well, we can't, Georgia's right back up there as a team that can win that division.
Yeah, and I want to turn to that SEC East, because now South Carolina, they've got to move forward, and what do you think the Gamecocks must improve to avoid another loss? Because Georgia is now the team sitting in the driver's seat. Last year, South Carolina wins this game 35-7. They sort of get up there, and then they lose. And that's how Georgia was able to eventually creep up there, win the tiebreakers, get the SEC East bid to the SEC title game. And whether this is Florida, South Carolina, or Georgia, the big picture here is, are you still in the running for Atlanta? What does South Carolina need to improve to make sure that they don't lose again?
Well, I think what worried me most about South Carolina last night was the way Georgia did, show that defense might not be everything it was advertised to be. Because, what happened to SEC defense? Did anybody, if the Big 12 plays that game yesterday, everybody's like, well, there goes the Big 12. Just, nobody can stop anybody. But with South Carolina last night, they were exposed. But the good news that I have for them anyway is, aside from that Clemson game to finish the year, I'm not sure what offense that South Carolina will face for the rest of the season, and particularly SEC play, that can do that to them again. Because just looking at their schedule, they get Kentucky, they get Vandy, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, Mississippi State, and Florida. None of those teams really, terrifies me as an offense.
Yeah.
So while the defense had its problems yesterday, I don't think it should be a huge concern, just because they're not going to face that offense again. They're not going to face a team as good with the ball as Georgia was. So things should come back to normal. But I would still, you'd still hope to see some improvement, because Clowney's had two off weeks and he's complaining that they're scheming for him. Well, he should probably get used to that, because any coach who doesn't scheme for him should be fired.
Yeah.
And the rest of that defensive line haven't really shown they haven't really played to their potential yet, to be honest.
Now let's move out to Big Ten country, where Michigan coming up with another classic game here in this rivalry, and I didn't like all the rivalry underdog, the chicken who's backing out. Aside from all that, I think that we saw the best that we could have seen from Devin Gardner and Gallen, and that connection right there really driving the Michigan offense. Were you concerned at all that, maybe the rest of it, like Fischel Toussaint and the ground game, do you think that was shut down by Notre Dame's defensive front, which we all know, filled with future NFL players? Or is that something where you think that needs to improve moving forward?
No, I do. I think that you're right. Gardner and Gallen were fantastic last night, but I agree. If I'm Brady Hoke, the one thing, coaches can never be happy. The one thing I'm taking away from that game is the fact that besides from Toussaint, there really wasn't any running back that could do anything. And Toussaint finished with 71 yards, but he needed 22 carries to get there. And as a team, Michigan averaged only 4.3 yards a carry rushing the ball. So if I'm Hoke, I'm concerned, because I don't want Devin Gardner leading my team in rushing every week.
Yeah.
Because that's what you had in Denard Robinson. And that's what they've been trying to get away from. So I don't want Gardner exposing himself to hits like that every week during the season. If I'm Michigan, I'm looking for some running backs to step up, whether it's Derek Green or Toussaint. Somebody, they need more. They need running backs that are going to be able to capable of carrying the ball. But at the same time, it was a Michigan offensive line. Three, you know, their two guards and center were making their second career starts. And like I mentioned, they were facing a very good defensive line in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So they might not have as tough a time, just like South Carolina with Georgia's offense. I don't know if the Michigan offensive line will have as tough of a test for the rest of the season as they did last night. There's reason to think it would improve there, but if I'm Brady Hoke, that's what I'm focusing on in practice.
Tommy Rees throws a couple of interceptions, and the internet seems to light up with all of the Tommy Rees jokes of 2011. Yeah. Is it fair for him to be criticized the way he is, or do you think that this is just sort of the laziness of just reverting back into blaming him for the earned reputation of tossing mm-hmm. turnovers at critical times?
It's fair. I mean, Tommy Rees is who Tommy Rees is at this point. He's, I believe after last night, his record's now 15-5 as a starter. So let's be pretty clear. Who Tommy Rees is isn't exactly terrible. And he did throw for 314 yards. It's just he only completed 57% of his passes, and he had a couple of bad turnovers. And it's getting to the point where it's just with Rees, you take the good with the bad, and you just hope there's more, a lot more good than there is bad.
Anything else that stood out to you in that game?
I worry about that Notre Dame defense, because I know they didn't look very good. That secondary was getting torn apart quite a bit easily by Gardner. And the pass rush, while evident at times, wasn't really consistent throughout the night. So last week against Temple, there wasn't really a test, but it didn't look outstanding that week either. So I have serious concerns whether this Notre Dame defense is quite up to the level as it was last season, because I think that Jalen Smith, who they have at middle linebacker right now, the freshman, I think by the time he leaves South Bend, he'll be a better player than Manti Te'o was. But right now, I don't think he has this. I don't think he's ready. He's making mistakes that's kind of costing him. That he can make up for it with his athleticism, but I don't think he knows how to run the defense quite like Te'o did. And I think it's having a direct impact on their performance.
Turning our attention now to Sun Life Stadium for a game that proved a lot wrong from a recent podcast. Our good friend Matt Moore, an NBA writer for CBSSports.com. He's a fan of the show, so thank you, Matt. We're glad you like it. But he also was sure to point out that in a previous podcast, Tom and I discussed, hey, look at that Florida offense and how well they're doing and how it looks like they've really got something going. Just after we say that, they go and really hand over what is a huge win for Al Golden in Miami and a troubling loss for Florida, 21-16, the final score, just buckets and buckets of turnovers, including four or five at the hands of Jeff Driskel. I do not think if you're Miami, you look back and think that this was the best football that you played, but the stage, how many people were watching it, I think they had 33 of their top recruits. I mean, it was a laundry list of who's who that they brought to this game. And while Sun Life Stadium is not an incredible home field advantage, getting that kind of win, especially if it's going to be the last time they're going to play, because these two schools fight for recruits, absolutely huge for the Hurricanes. But the Gators, who were number 12, they've slipped down to number, I think, 20, 19, 18 in the AP polls. Yeah. Miami enters at number 15. Is there anything other than the offensive struggles that you can say helped Miami? What about Miami's game impressed you?
I don't think Florida's offense really struggled. I think it had over 400 yards of total offense, and it averaged 5.5 yards a play. It was the five turnovers that killed Florida. Their offense was fine until the red zone, and Jeff Driskel was just like throwing the ball away. Because, I mean, look at these numbers. Miami had 212 yards of offense, was 1 for 11 on third down, averaged 4 yards a play, averaged 1.8 yards a rush. I mean, and they won. And it's only because of the turnovers. Like, if I'm Miami, yes, I'm happy I won the game because, awesome, I beat Florida, and, you know, that's another win. And it gives you momentum going forward. But there's nothing in the game that I'm happy about this way as far as I'm performance concerned, because Miami played like crap. If it wasn't for the 5 turnovers, Miami's not winning that game, and it's probably not even close. So I think Florida's got a lot to worry about with Jeff Driskel being a turnover machine. But as far as everything else, the defense played just wonderfully fine, and the offense, aside from Driskel, wasn't bad. So if I'm the Gators, this loss sucks, but I'm not really concerned about it. If I'm Miami, I'm happy, but I shouldn't be too happy about it.
I will give credit to the defensive front of Miami, which was, while a little bit young, porous would be a nice way to put it, last year, as they just allowed a lot of teams to kind of carve them up. They did a good job of limiting that Florida rushing attack of Matt Jones and Mack Brown as a team. You know, they were all averaging less than 3 yards a carry. I will say that is something they can take away. But Duke Johnson enters the game as the nation's leading rusher. He had
a tough game.
He had a tough, tough game. Very, very hard to find running room. So, you know, again, big win for Miami. But now the spotlight's on him. And I will pitch this to you, Tom. Florida State, Clemson, and Miami, all currently in the AP poll. First question. Do you think that a fourth team from the ACC will get up there and join them at any time? And second question, do you think all three teams will finish ranked in the top 25?
I'm relatively certain Florida State and Clemson will. I think Miami should, because I feel like beating Florida just this week through the top 25 all year, just in the minds of voters, even if they finish 8-4, I think that Florida win could be enough to keep them in there. But outside of those three teams, no, I don't really see anybody else who I think is primed to compete for an ACC title. I mean, I think Miami's favorite in the Coastal, although I don't know how big of a favorite. I Georgia Tech, you never really know what the hell is going to happen. North Carolina, the South Carolina loss you can't knock before, they look good this week. I don't expect Duke to really hang around. The Hokies will probably be better than we saw against Alabama. So I'd say Miami's still my favorite, but I wouldn't put money on them in the Coastal.
Yeah, yeah. It would seem, just from an outsider's perspective, that, you know, you've got that cluster at the top, and then there's a little bit of – there's a drop-off after that as you go to a Virginia Tech team, which obviously is just absolutely riddled with injuries and has a lot of problems offensively. Georgia Tech, like you said, always very tough to tell, particularly when they start out with a school record, perform like 70 points against Elon. They're off this week, and now they play against Duke. So they go from Duke to North Carolina, and so it's a very odd combination of opponents for Georgia Tech and that sort of flexbone option attack. But go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, why don't you tell me about your Terps?
Yeah, well, that's
– you're high on them.
I am very high on Maryland. I think that with C.J. Brown healthy, he provides a legitimate, you know, run-pass threat. And that's one of the things that Randy Edsall has really championed in some of his comments when he's praising the offense. Because, yeah, they've come out, and between Florida International and ODU, you know, they're not necessarily facing the kind of opponents that are going to be exactly like what they're going to face in ACC play. But ODU held to just 10 points. You know, that is their lowest point total since 2008. I like the fact that C.J. Brown, along with Albert Reed, Brandon Ross, the two running backs there, they've sort of each had different games in these first 2 weeks stepping up. We all know Stephon Diggs is awesome, but Deion Long, the junior college transfer, he was the junior college player of the year last year. He's come in there, and so it's almost like the way the offense is sort of being put together, according to Randy Edsall, is that it's a pick your poison type offense. And so as long as they can stay healthy, again, that's me knocking on wood, because as long as they can stay healthy, and then the defense under the direction of Brian Stewart, I think that is the third best team in the Atlantic Division. However, it is Clemson and Florida State, and then a large drop before you get to Maryland.
So what you're saying is Maryland is going to win the ACC and then take the title with them to the Big Ten next year.
Yes, they are. I mean, that's it. Again, I told you this on Saturday when we were watching all the games. You know, that it almost stinks, because Maryland is really starting to get
not
back
suck.
On. Yeah, really starting to get back on track. You know, I would consider them a top 35 team in the country right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that right now.
Yeah, right now they're about top 35 in the country, and that's a good team. And they're going to go to the Big Ten, where you'd slot them above Purdue, maybe Iowa.
Well, I mean, they're going to a Big Ten, and they're going to be in the same division as Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, so good luck.
Well, it's the same thing as they – I mean, that's no better than they are now with Florida State and Clemson.
It's a familiar position, but the paycheck will be bigger, so the pain hurts a little less.
All right, let's move on to the Big 12. We got, first of all, a little bit of news. Casey Paulhall fractured left arm. It's his non-throwing arm, but after surgery, looks like reportedly he will be out 8 weeks. That is obviously a majority of the season. Won't even be back until early November. Trayvon Boykin takes over. Tom, how do you adjust TCU's expectations? I think that you and I both had them as a, you know, you'd slot them about fourth or fifth, but know that they've got a shot to sneak up and win the Big 12. Do you still think that?
Well, the good news is Boykin got plenty of experience last year. So
right. At
least you're in the better spot of going to somebody who's untested and unproven. As far as competing in the Big 12, I would say it hurts their chances. But from what we've seen in the Big 12 the first few weeks, I mean, I thought Oklahoma looked great in its opening week, and we'll get to them more a bit. I thought, on Saturday night, Oklahoma looked pretty awful, especially on offense. The defense is still fine, but now there's questions with the Sooners' offense. So I think the Big 12 is just proving with each week that it truly wide open. So while I think Paul's injury certainly hurts, I think Boykin is good enough where he can keep, and if the defense plays well, he could keep TCU in the hunt, because I'm starting to think 7-2 might do it in the Big 12.
Yeah, you just mentioned Oklahoma. Oklahoma and West Virginia last year, 50-49, unbelievable offense. Tavon Austin has 344 all-purpose yards. Landry Jones throwing it all over the place. Absolutely huge game. So exciting. This year was absolutely horrid to watch from an offensive perspective.
It was terrible. As
Paul Millard for West Virginia and Trevor Knight for Oklahoma just really could not get it going. I mean, it was depressing when Blake Bell entered the game and the home Norman crowd erupted with the loudest cheers that they had had. Blake Bell finishes the game with just two rushing attempts and one passing attempt.
Yeah.
He did not complete said passing attempt. Trevor Knight finishes 10 for 20, averaging just 6 yards per passing attempt, one touchdown, two interceptions. Paul Millard, again, a 21 for 41, just 5.3 yards per attempt, zero touchdowns, one interception. Again, I think the only positive takeaway looking at both teams is Oklahoma's defense, again, doing a better job. They had the 175-yard touchdown in the very first quarter. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's defense pitches a shutout against ULM last year. They hold West Virginia to 7 points in this game. At least that's a positive sign. This is year two with Stoops as the defensive coordinator. You know, what is your takeaway here?
I think the SEC is turning into the Big 12, and the Big 12 is turning into the SEC. No, I think that's the only positive Oklahoma can really take from yesterday's game is the defense has looked fantastic through two games this year. So while they're getting – maybe that'll allow them to work through the struggles on offense as they wait for Knight to figure it out, or maybe, you know, they make the move to the Blake Bell, which I don't think that's going to happen because they tried last night and it didn't really work all that well. So I think that's the defense will keep him in it, and it's going to keep him as a contender. But there's a lot of questions still to answer that we're going to see in the coming weeks.
J.W. Walsh looks really, really good in his second start of the season. Comes out, or not his second start, as his first game as the starter. He played most of the game as opposed to last week when he and Clint Shelf, it was more of a two-man attack. Unbelievably efficient as the Cowboys sort of pull away from Texas San Antonio. Oklahoma State still your front runner in that division, because I'm again starting to put them right there, right next to another really efficient quarterback, and that is Baylor quarterback Bryce Petty, as Baylor absolutely ran through just really running through their schedule. Oklahoma State and Baylor don't play each other until November 23rd. Do you see either one of those teams losing a conference game before then?
First of all, Baylor could have gotten to 100 points yet on Saturday.
Easily.
If it wanted to. It had 56 time. And then Briles and that offense just—I mean, they didn't take their foot off the gas. They literally just parked the car. Still scored 14 points in the second half.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma State, like you mentioned, Walsh, he completed 24, 27 passes. I mean, yeah, that's a bit efficient. And side note, how bad is the Mississippi State offense if it can only manage 3 points against the Cowboys, yet UTSA was able to get 35?
Larry Coker, man, he's got a program building down there.
Yeah. The Roadrunners, you know, they can move the ball.
Yeah.
But it's just, I agree. At this point, if I had to name favorites, I would say Oklahoma State and Baylor. The Baylor defense, I'd still like to see it face an actual test before I really, you know, christen them as a Big 12 title contender.
We've got, you got anything else on Big 12?
Kansas won.
All right, moving to a conference title contender. Ohio State gets a little bit of a scare as Braxton Miller strains his MCL. Are you nervous all about this big picture, or is your read from Columbus that Miller should be able to be 100% by the time it matters?
Well, from what they're telling us, I think Miller will be fine if it's just a slight sprain. But also at the same time, I mean, yeah, losing Braxton Miller sucks, but did you see Kenny Clark
come on? Yeah, he played really, really well.
There wasn't a drop-off. He came on, he threw for only 150 yards. But he completed nearly 70% of his passes. He threw for 2 touchdowns. He rushed for another 83 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he pretty much came on and played the role of Braxton Miller. And he did a very, you know, he had an Oscar-worthy performance. So I would be concerned with Miller just because he is so dynamic that I think if Ohio State wants to compete for a national championship, they're going to need Braxton Miller. But if something serious were to happen and he were to miss serious time, I think with Kenny Guyton, the Buckeyes are still strong enough to win the Big Ten.
Do you think that Nebraska is still a team that is going to be able to finish at the top of that division, or do you think that there is a little bit more of a battle, particularly with Nebraska's start and then the way that Michigan has started?
I'm not writing Nebraska off. I mean, it's been a bit of a slow start, and they certainly looked better against Southern Miss. They had the 2 defensive touchdowns, which must feel really nice for those guys after the blisterings they've taken in the last few games. But I still think Nebraska and Michigan are the two best teams in that division, although I've been very impressed with Northwestern in these first 2 weeks. I think they'll pick up into that discussion. But right now, yeah, it's Nebraska and Michigan, and I give Michigan the slight edge at this point.
Impressed at all with Wisconsin and Northwestern coming up with pretty big wins. I think Syracuse is really, really bad. Wisconsin obviously facing inferior competition with Tennessee Tech.
Yeah, I'm not judging Wisconsin for anything that they've done the first 2 weeks. UMass and Tennessee Tech, I mean, you can't take anything that happened to hard or serious because like you mentioned, it's inferior competition. Northwestern, yeah, I'm very impressed with. Although, I mean, Cal struggled against, what was it, Portland State this week.
Yeah.
So that win against Cal last week looked a little less impressive, but they took care of Syracuse at home, and Syracuse has looked bad these first 2 weeks against Penn State and now Northwestern. So I guess they're lucky they never got that Big Ten invite. But I think the Wildcats, if again, this is going to be the caveat the entire time because they didn't have Vendrick Mark again last night. If this team stays healthy, it's a team that I think can't compete for the Legends Division title. I don't know if it truly will, but it's going to be there. It's going to come down to a game here or there, and they're going to be in every game. So Northwestern's a very good team. I don't put them on the same level as Nebraska or Michigan, though.
Washington State's defense delivers enough stops to be able to escape Los Angeles with a 10-7 shootout win, just what everyone knew was going to happen when Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin take the field. Lane Kiffin, unfortunately, hearing the fire Kiffin chants from the Coliseum faithful, things are really getting tough out in Los Angeles. Max Wittick, Cody Kessler, neither of them really able to move the ball or get it to Marquise Lee or Nelson Aguilar. Trey Madden, who is a former linebacker, actually one of the only bright spots for USC offensively. I think, like I told you on Saturday night, USC's D really good, and it's almost sad and unfortunate that everything else seems to be crumbling around them because a loss to Washington State will not sit well at all. And the way that they lost does not give me a lot of hope that they will be able to be a contender in the Pac-12 South come November.
That game was just awful.
Horrid.
I mean, you and me were both looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, this game could be pretty fun. It could be bad. Horrible. Four interceptions thrown by the quarterbacks, no touchdowns. It's like, and I hope that, I wonder if Connor Halliday had any comments about USC quarterbacks after last night's game, considering, you know, he's making, I want him to have a trend of playing poorly and then criticizing the other team's quarterbacks. But, no, it was a, yeah, because USC's problem last year was the defense for the most part, and the defense certainly this year seems to have gotten things figured out and they played well, but just that offense was, I don't know if it's the players. I don't know if it's the execution. I don't know if it's the play calling. I think it's a nice stew of everything.
It's a stew. But,
I mean, yeah. I mean, what Lane Kiffin called like their first plays. All he was calling was like wide receiver screens, bubble screen, just screen after screen after screen, and then one of them gets picked off and taken for pick six, and he's like, "Duh, how'd that happen?" I mean, you've run the same play 15 straight times. That's how it happened. So, I don't understand. After what I saw last night, I don't think there's a chance in hell that Lane Kiffin is still coaching USC next year. He might not still be coaching USC by the time the season's over.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Stanford's debut win over San Jose State, nothing really impressed me, but that's because I also have very lofty expectations for this Cardinal team, putting them along with pretty much everybody else up in the top five and considering them a possible national title contender. There's a lot of things to work on. David Shaw said as much after the game. You have any takeaway from it?
I didn't really pay any attention to this game until after Stanford had pretty much put it away. So I didn't see it till the second half. But from what I saw, Stanford's defense looks just fine. I know that San Jose State couldn't move the ball. Of course, San Jose State's not quite the same as the Pac-12 competition Stanford will have to face. But from what I saw, yeah, I mean, Stanford looked like Stanford. And that's really all I could say. I can't take too much away from it other than that.
LSU and Texas A&M both coming out with really big, very big wins. The SEC West, obviously, with a very big game ahead. I don't know if you heard about this, Tom, but they're playing a game in College Station on Saturday.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Who are they playing?
It's you get early pick. You got the Tide.
I don't know yet. I lean Tide, yes.
Yeah, I'm leaning Tide, yes, but I've got till Tuesday night to turn in my expert picks. Boise State gets back on track. I don't think you will see them lose like they did in week one again. In any individual performances really stand out to you, Tom?
I think, what's his name, the quarterback at Texas Tech. It wasn't against very good competition, but for a walk-on true freshman, he had another monster game.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield.
There we go.
Might be he or Jared Goff, the Cal quarterback, early. Might be named CBSSports.com newcomer of the week.
And then Teddy Bridgewater had another Teddy Bridgewater game. So, I mean, I'd say he's our Heisman favorite at this point. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think so. And I've been saying this in any time that you get asked the question about, you know, who's your Heisman favorite. I'll often tell radio hosts, you know, I'm afraid to name anybody a Heisman favorite because the entire 2012 Heisman race wasn't anybody winning the Heisman. It was just every Heisman favorite losing.
Yep.
One by one.
Matt Barkley to Geno Smith.
To Colin Klein. I mean, yeah. You went right down the line. And then it was like Kenyon Barner tried to make a late surge, and then everybody started talking about how his stats were inflated. I mean, I don't want to try and name Teddy Bridgewater the Heisman favorite for fear of him having a poor game, which prevents him from the Heisman. So
I don't share that fear with Bridgewater this year, not with the schedule that Louisville would be facing compared with his talent. I think we might have ourselves a post to finish, you know, Heisman winner.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Cincinnati not exactly looking like the great end-of-season foe that they did after beating down Purdue.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know going on the road to face a Big Ten team is tough, and they lost Munchie Legault to a gruesome-looking injury in the second half, but they just looked absolutely lifeless throughout most of that game yesterday, and they lost by 28 to an Illinois team that finished 2-10 last year and needed a goal line stand to hold off FCS Southern Illinois in week one. So nobody in the American Athletic Conference is doing Louisville any favors 2 weeks into the season.
No, not at all. All right, well, this about wraps up the Rewind. Don't forget, here's what we got coming ahead as we look towards week three. Of course, we will be looking at College Station for Alabama and Texas A&M. If you tune in on Tuesday, we'll have a discussion with Dennis Dodd, who will be checking in from College Station. He will ring in and tell us what's been going on around Kevin Sumlin, Johnny Manziel, and that Aggies program. And then we will also be doing our weekly Expert Picks podcast later in the week, where I'm sure we will discuss not only a breakdown of the game, but potentially the final score or our best guess at the point spread. For Tom Fornelli, follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.